Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of people trying to mess with C.J. Stroud today. I'm going to tell you why you don't mess with C.J. Stroud. Because when you mess with C.J. Stroud, Seth, you are messing with the player who, according to data put out yesterday, period of March 1st, 2024 through May 31st, 2024, basically Q1 of the NFL business year, nobody moved more jerseys than C.J. Stroud.
Ooh.
Number one. You know how I am with jersey sales. Number one in jersey sales for March 1st. Number two, Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback on the planet.
Yeah, CJ, it'll pick up for him someday.
That kid's going to he's going somewhere.
He needs some advice from CJ.
Right.
But, Pat Mahomes probably can't wait. He probably can't wait until that matchup in December when he can hopefully get a few seconds of advice from C.J. Stroud,
you know,
in midfield.
It's funny. I meant to say that earlier, like when we were talking about the C.J. Caleb Williams thing. Like, as mad as people in Chicago were getting and people who love Caleb Williams, like Nick Wright, were getting about C.J. Stroud giving advice to somebody who he's only 3 weeks older than or whatever it is. If CJ were to walk up to Josh Allen, like after week five, the Texans beat the Bills here and say, hey, bro, look, you're going to be a great quarterback. Then I would see like on Monday, everybody getting a little agitated with CJ.
Okay. This is the difference. And this is why Chicago people are so sensitive about this right now. And Florio, who Florio's got some deep-seated psychological issues. I think it's pretty obvious. So he puts enough stuff out there, and you can tell by what he gets emotional about that he's got some issues.
And
so,
Florio just cracked me up. I don't know why.
This is the problem they're having, is that if you do the little exercise of, okay, let's swap roles. Let's look at the way C.J. Stroud has operated, the way he's taken advice, the way he looks almost kind of, going back to the Elite 11 days, he looks kind of just surprised and flattered that people even know who he is still.
Yeah.
You know, like Matt Stafford, he was like, he said that Matt Stafford was nice to him, and that was nice. Like, it was really cool that he was nice to me. Okay, if you just flip roles, and if Caleb Williams had gone into the NFL a year earlier and was Offensive Rookie of the Year, what would CJ's response have been if Caleb Williams was trying to give him advice at midfield after, say, the Colts game last year or the after the Ravens game, the first game of the year?
Yeah. I think CJ would have listened.
He would have been very receptive to it.
I think
And I think that's the big deal. The problem, the reason Bears fans are getting so upset about that exchange is that even though I can totally excuse the way Caleb Williams looked either dismissive or just wanted to get the hell out of there. I get that, and I understand that. The problem is, it does fit in perfectly with the narrative that I've resisted. I try to resist narratives about guys' attitudes and whatnot coming out of college, but man, it fits in perfectly with that narrative. And if you're a Chicago fan that suffered through decade after decade after decade of wandering in the darkness when it comes to trying to find a quarterback, it hurts. Like, he's just feeding the narrative right there.
Yep.
He's feeding the narrative.
Here are the top 10 in the jerseys. CJ 1, Mahomes 2. How about the fact that the Lions have three of the top eight guys? Aiden Hutchinson, 3. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 4. Joe Burrow, 5. Jalen Hurts, 6. Saquon Barkley, who Eagles, so that's a new one. That's a new one, so that stands to reason. Jahmyr Gibbs is number 8. Micah Parsons, number 9. Brock Purdy, number 10. You know what? Maybe Brock Purdy is going to get the $60 million. He's 10th in jersey sales.
Yeah, you're very skeptical about that.
I am.
I look at, man, all right, I think that the 49ers aren't going to overthink this unless he keeps playing the way he did last week versus the Vikings. But I don't think they're going to overthink this. They have a quarterback that they feel they can rely upon and that is capable of obviously taking them to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or potentially winning a Super Bowl. Then they're not going to overthink it, and he gets that contract. They've whiffed on Garoppolo. They've whiffed on Trey Lance.
Yeah.
Do they really think, Brock Purdy's just not quite good enough? This is when we're going to start being careful about how we spend on quarterbacks.
Yeah, you may be right. He's 10th in jersey sales. That's changed my opinion.
I think the fact that the Lions are up there, there's a little bit of the same thing probably going on with the Texans. A, you have an exciting team that's on the rise, very easy to like by the local fan base for various reasons, good personalities on that team, good players.
Yeah.
But also, there's there's not a lot of people out there with recently purchased jerseys. So
yeah, that's fair.
Most of the jersey money has gone towards Astros players the last decade or so Houston. So I think, yeah, now is when you start swinging back the pendulum to some of these young, exciting guys. Likewise, in Detroit, a lot of people just didn't bother spending money on Lions jerseys the last decade or so.
Nobody gets a better gauge on the jersey, kind of the jersey, you know, the kind of how it's spread out amongst fans, you know,
the
like
jersey market.
Which Texan fans, like, who's the most popular jersey? Nobody gets a better gauge than you and I because we're out there for the pregame show and we see all the jersey wearers out there.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago, it was hard to find fans wearing jerseys of current Houston Texans. That's just the fact. It was all J.J. Watt and Andre Johnson, you know, some clownies and things like
that. There were a lot of Roy Lopez's because there were a lot of people that just like, hey, my last name's Lopez, right. You know? So there, there were more Roy Lopez's than you would expect. If Roy Lopez had worked out,
yeah.
I think there were so many Lopez households that would be like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Or
you had a lot of people with Seth Payne jerseys that did that thing they did with David Carr jerseys where they just put tape over Carr and put Schaub on it. You know, they put tape over Payne and they just wrote Lopez on it.
I saw a guy in a 91 jersey before Roy Lopez got here, and it was,
a Moby?
I was like, ah, it was weird. I was like, that can't possibly be a Seth Payne jersey. It was down in League City, I remember. And it was, it was a Moby Okoye. But this was like 10 years after a Moby Okoye was gone.
That's funny.
I talked to the guy. I was just curious. I didn't say who I was or anything, and he had no clue who I was.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't want to be like, hey, you know who you say also have that number.
No, but if he was like a diehard Texan fan and he knew who you were, that would have been the weirdest day ever. He's in his number 91 jersey, and in comes the original number 91, happens to be in the same store as him or wherever the hell you were.
I would, not wearing a mic or anything. If I see that out in nature, if I have a Sharpie on me, which unfortunately I never do, I would, I'd be like, hey, you want me to sign that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel like that was egotistical or anything. That would be like, okay, this guy's a diehard.
Yeah, man.
Who the hell has a Seth Payne jersey unironically these days?
Unironically. So Michael Mulville is a media reporter. Mulvihill is a media reporter, and he tweeted this yesterday. Guessing game. Through week two, which NFL team is showing the largest percentage increase in local viewership? The gap between this team and the second biggest growth team is enormous. Care to take a stab, Seth, on our Houston-based radio show as to which NFL team is showing the largest percentage increase in local viewership?
When you sent this to me yesterday, I did. I assumed that's why you were sending it to me, but I tried to think about it, and I thought maybe it would be Chicago or something, just based on the quarterback. But Houston. It's Houston.
It's Houston. Yeah, 60. Houston local viewership ratings are up 67% through week two.
Does that account for the fact that it was also Sunday Night Football?
Well, of course it accounts for it, but it doesn't. But that's probably something that needs to be mentioned as part of the numbers. Is like we should mention they had a primetime game.
Yeah, if it was a noon game for week two, I don't think it would be as big a leap. But it's been you can feel this. You can feel this on the streets, Sean. I'm on the streets a lot.
I know you are.
And on the streets, I've felt it. I've sensed it. Compared to week two last year, where I think everybody liked D'Amico, but we were very much, as a fan base, in wait-and-see mode. We could tell that out at the pregame show before the Colts, that everybody kind of had one toe in the water, and not even their big toe. There's maybe like they're trying to, if they were flexible enough, they were putting their pinky toe in the water. And this year, it's obviously a lot different.
Yeah, I think, 67% is remarkable. The fact that the second place team in terms of local viewership growth is the Falcons at 10% increase is crazy. That's wild.
Erin Kapner just texted me a photo of her in her Seth Payne 91 jersey.
Oh yeah,
which is which I know she wears. She proudly wears the Texans games. She works for. She's one of the best. She's like one of the most vital employees at Odyssey.
Oh yeah,
basically makes the trains run on time at Odyssey.
She's the glue of this place.
She proudly wears her. Which I think also probably has most people thinking that she's either my wife or sister or something like that.
Yeah,
because she's she's the only Seth. We have one of our listeners that comes to games wearing a Seth Payne jersey.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as the viewership being up by 60%.
Sorry, I didn't mean to sound surprised. I just, yeah.
We've seen him at the pregame before.
I know, we have, yeah.
We have the one who has it, and it says unbearable on the back. That's a Seth Payne jersey.
Yeah.
By way of an incident that happened several years ago that we don't need to talk about.
That's right.
Instance in which I was called unbearable by Mike Meltzer 19 times in 30 seconds. It was
a legendary moment.
Yeah. A lot of change. Just changed who I was as a person. I feel like I'm less unbearable these days.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Mike was right to call me unbearable in that moment, even though I still maintain that I was correct in the argument that I was having with him. I'm going to call him after the show just to remind him of that.
That's got to exist on the internet somewhere.
Just because I threw a $20 bill at him, he thought that was unbearable in that moment.
It's a great barb, though. You know. So what were we talking about here? Oh, a lot of people pointing out the Lions and the Texans both have new uniforms also. I'm not going to let you people bringing up actual facts rain on my CJ Stroud jersey parade, okay?
You know, the new uniforms I like a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, they look better in games.
I'm not usually all that worked up about uniforms and everything, but even in the Hall of Fame game, remember, it was a little bit confusing because they looked similar to the Bears uniforms.
Yeah.
That's why I was glad that the Bears wore their all-orange uniforms. Because it's that dark, dark, dark blue looks a lot like the Bears' dark, dark, dark blue.
Yep.
The first two games of the season, I felt like the uniforms really popped. I'm a big fan of the new ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they look really, really good. We get our first taste of the alternate uniforms, I think, week 5 against the Bills is a color rush, the H-Town blue. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure, okay. Week 5.
So the black and the H-Town blue ones.
The black, yeah, the dark blue with the light blue H on the side of the helmet.
Yeah,
yeah, those. Yeah. I think we get those against the Bills. Just got back. This is a text from Choppa and Alvin. Got back from a cruise on Monday. Watched the game in the middle of the Gulf under the stars with unlimited drinks and hundreds of fans. Was freaking awesome. Tell you what, man. Cool. If you're not going to watch the game at the stadium, that's pretty good right there. Watching it outdoors on the deck of a cruise ship at night with an open bar. Oof.
Well, and probably, you know what's fun too is when you go to a sports bar or something outside of Houston these days and people are actually interested in the Texans game.
Yeah.
If they're not playing the Cowboys or something, it could be the Texans versus the, let's say, I don't know, another nondescript, the Colts or something.
Yeah.
And people are like, they know about the Texans. I mean, it's cool when I'm traveling. I was in Oregon yesterday and I hear some guy, I'm in Oregon today, but I hear somebody yesterday talking about the Vikings versus the Texans and getting a lot of things wrong, but I just wanted to get my pizza and get the hell out of there.
No, you got to set them straight, Seth. Rando guy in Oregon pizza joint.
Well, actually, here's where you're wrong.
Give me that marker. Okay, here. And you just start X-ing and O-ing on the wall. That would be sweet. Hey, speaking of that Bears game, the Bears game on Sunday, if you need more proof of Swarm, the credo of Swarm, here's Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet, tight end for the Bears, who got absolutely obliterated on a play by Jalen Petrie that was originally called an illegal hit, and then they went back and looked at the replay like, oh, no, that was actually just with his shoulder into Cole Kmet's chest. That's all it was. Cole Kmet said this is the hardest he's ever been hit.
I did try to sell it for a little bit because it wasn't like a head-to-head thing, but, I mean, he got me clean. That was a clean hit.
Yeah.
And then got to the ground, and I did have to take a second because I was like, whew, man, that was a That was quite the hit there, and they did throw the flag initially, but then they ended up picking it back up. But
to answer your question, somebody would have had to probably carry me to the plane to get home. That was a good hit.
It was a good hit. It was a clean hit. It was a clean hit.
Cole, where does that rank as far as hardest hits you've taken in your career?
That's probably the hardest. Now, that being said, I was like fully relaxed. Not that I wasn't expecting it, but I was more focused on catching the football. So like you're not like tensing your body up.
Yeah, he held on to the ball. that was pretty impressive. About that. Yeah,
and that was, man. Remember from the original angle, it looked like it might have been helmet to helmet. Credit to Petrie for really. I mean, that was a nice, clean, legal football hit.
Yeah,
that's something that. Why am I blanking on this? The safety who ended up in Kansas City.
Tyrann Mathieu.
Justin Reed.
Justin Reed.
Justin Reed has really got really good at the clean legal hit.
Yeah.
And he wasn't as good at it his rookie year, and then he figured it out along the way. There are a lot of good safeties and or nickelbacks that have figured that out. I think Petrie is hopefully one of those guys. I was trying to think. That was with about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. I'm trying to remember when Will Anderson's sack was, because on Will Anderson's sack, Cole Kmet was running a play action where it's supposed to look like he's run blocking, and you try to dupe Will Anderson a little bit, but then he's supposed to convert into a pass blocker. Cole Kmet looked like he was shrinking away from contact, like a fourth grader who's never played football before. A kid who hasn't learned how to waterboy it yet and learned how to be physical. And I wonder, I'll look at this during the break. I gotta see if that was after the big hit by Petrie, because that's a bad look for Cole.
Well,
Cole Kmet blocked in that instance.
If Petrie's hit was with only like you said, like 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, it was definitely before, because it was the Anderson sack was definitely before that. So, because Danielle Hunter's the one who had the sack late in the game. They each got sack. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Man, tomorrow's Football Friday. That's going to be fun. We're going to keep getting you ready for Vikings and Texans. Battle of a couple 2-0 teams. Let's circle back to the Astros. It looks like it's almost a lock as to where the Astros are going to be come playoff time, seating-wise. But it's far from a lock as to who they're going to play. And there's some really interesting scenarios. Which of these do you prefer? We'll give you your choices coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the Astros lose yesterday to the Padres 4-0. So the Padres take 2 out of 3. It's not a big deal. The Astros are still 5 games up on the Mariners. They're 5.5 back still of the Guardians. I don't think the Mariners are catching the Astros. And if I feel that way, then I think almost by definition, I have to feel like the Astros are not going to catch the Guardians either, given that it's the virtually the same gap between the Astros and the 2 seed as it is between the Mariners and the Astros.
Look, we've seen them. I think the biggest thing that keeps you from panicking or worrying about the recent stretch of whatever you want to call it, mediocrity, is that they've demonstrated with their rotating cast of minor leaguers that they are very capable of beating the best teams in the league, and that it doesn't feel like it's all going to fall apart at some point.
And
you're just in that classic mode with the Astros over the last decade of, all right, well, we'll get to the postseason, and experience and veteran leadership, et cetera, hopefully take over, and maybe you get some performances out of some of these. Who's going to be the Chaz McCormick this year?
Right.
Who's going to be the guy that who's going to be the guy that really goes above and beyond expectations? Because you're going to have something like that along the way. But the actual star power still matters. Is Verlander going to be peak Verlander by playoff time?
Right. I'm kind of doing the comparison in my head right now of last year's playoff team with this year's team that's about to be in the playoffs. This is a better version of the Astros now than the one that went into the postseason last year. The one in the postseason last year had Jose Abreu at first base, and I know he was better in September than he was the rest. They had Jose Abreu at first base. You know, they didn't have this version of Framber. Like, Framber was not this version. Hunter Brown is an elite level starter right now. I think the rotation. Hader is a better closer than Presley was last year. That's why they went out and got Josh Hader. This is a better version of the Astros than the one that went into the postseason.
I think if you look at both starting pitching and the bullpen, which the bullpen is, you know, the pitching staff in total, you feel a lot better about right now. And playoff baseball is pitching baseball, basically.
Yeah.
The other part about Abreu, though, too, is even though Abreu performed well individually, it's still this version of the Astros is one that can utilize speed on the base paths, and that whether Abreu is hitting well or not, he was just a big old crossing guard on the when it came to the lineup. And it's a different version of baseball than you were capable of playing with him.
We have a more fluid lineup. You can go into the postseason and go, you know what? We don't have to, because they had to play Abreu at first base. They had to. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, you'd be like, Sean, you don't have to do anything. No, you had to. And he was hitting okay and whatever. But you can kind of rejigger lineups now with, you know, put Yiner at first base if you want to, and Caratini at catcher, and DH, you know, somebody else if it's Jordan.
You've got more flexibility at DH, for sure. Yeah,
because there's not this statue sitting there at first base that you have to put in the 7-hole in the lineup, and he plays first base, and that's all he can do, and he don't even do it that well. So the Astros are going to be the 3 seed, barring some sort of really odd mathematical situation. They're going to be the 3 seed. It'll be the winner of the AL East. It'll be the 1 seed in all likelihood, although the Guardians are right there with, you know, record-wise. The Guardians and somebody from the AL East are going to be the 1 and 2 seeds. The Astros will be the 3 seed, which means they don't get a bye in the first round. They'll play the 6th seed. They'll play the least of the 3 wild card teams, which right now it would be Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But don't look now. A.J. Hinch and the Detroit Tigers are a half game back of the Twins are faltering right now, and the Tigers are 25-10 in their last 35 games. They were 8 games below 500 in August, and it's been one of the quickest turnarounds this late in the season in baseball. My question, and I'm assuming that Carlos Correa comes back and plays at some point, but for those who don't know, he's been dealing with plantar fasciitis for the better part of 2.5 months now, but he's looking for treatments for it. He's hoping to get back on the field. Pretend that Correa gets back on the field, Seth. Who would you rather face in the postseason? Which would be more fun? Carlos Correa and the Twins, which we've done that. They did it last year. Or I think an A.J. Hinch against the Astros story would be utterly fascinating.
I think it would be fascinating. I think that it would probably bring a lot more national attention, whether you like that or care about it or not. I always just feel like it makes it more exciting the more you know whenever there's just eyeballs turned on it and people are talking about it on SportsCenter and what have you. Now we know that in Chicago, one thing they don't want to hear anything about is A.J. Hinch, who's only a year older than Joe Espada, he's not allowed to give Joe Espada any kind of advice because they're chronologically about the same age.
Right, yeah. Right, yep.
Because C.J. Stroud, who's the same age, is only a little bit older than Caleb Williams. C.J. is not allowed to give him advice.
Very upset, so likewise, Chicago today.
Nothing A.J. Hinch can teach Joe Espada, apparently.
Nope. Yep. This would bring the sign stealing back into the forefront more than anything else. Would be A.J. Hinch managing a wild card round series against the Astros. Like, it's pretty much kind of disappeared for the most part. You still have people that boo at the ballparks, but in terms of the Astros made it to game 7 of the ALCS last year. I can't remember one time where the sign stealing scandal was front and center during a broadcast or as part of a feature. If A.J. Hinch is managing the Astros opponent in the wild card round, it'll be a topic, you know, not that the Astros are cheating again, but just that he got fired for it. You know what I mean?
He got fired for it. I think that it had turned into a lot of, and it was, these are the evil ones that were doing it despite A.J. Hinch smashing a monitor in protest and what have you. And now A.J. Hinch is doing it the clean way.
Yeah.
And they're trying to take down the evil empire. Yeah. I look forward to hating A.J. Hinch if that's the series.
I like A.J. Hinch, man.
I know, yeah. But I look forward to hating him for a brief spell of time. Sean, what did we say yesterday?
What did we say? I don't remember.
We're going to embrace our pettiness, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Cast aside all of your human decency.
You tried for a while today to not do that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That was a long time ago.
3 hours.
That was 3.5 hours ago when I said I was going to be magnanimous and a better human being today. Yeah, that's all done with. Anything I've ever said nice about A.J. Hinch, I was deluded. I had addiction issues is the problem back then.
Yeah. The answer's Hinch to me for this one. We've seen the Correa deal. Plus, it would be for me personally. It would, given all the grief I was getting from Minnesota Twin fans when I took them to task for cheering Altuve getting beaned at the ballpark that day. Oh, the receipts are going to be amazing if the Twins miss the playoffs, because there was so much. Keep in mind where the Astros were back then. They were still behind the Mariners back then in early July. and the Twins were making a run at the top of the division. And it was like, we have literally Twins fans going, we have a great team and your team is turning into trash.
Right, right.
I'm waiting.
Well, not to mention, like, you know, gloating about them having Carlos Correa. Yeah, against his will, you were his third choice. It's like some dude bragging about his girlfriend. And you're like, well, where is she? Oh, she's bound and gagged in the trunk. That's my girlfriend. Yeah, there she is.
Yeah.
Deeply in love we are.
She's the one banging on the door of the trunk from inside. Where is
she? She's the one rapidly blinking out SOS in Morse code with with her eyes. Yeah.
You know what the funny thing was about those people? Is they, yes, and I call them those people, is that they were so into what the Twins were on pace for and the Astros were on pace for. It's almost as if they didn't realize that it's 162 game season, you know, like that they, the fact that they were on pace for 92 wins or 90, the fact that they were on pace for a number that's literally less wins than every full season the Astros have had other than last year during this run of dominance was really funny. They were really into the on pace, man. Really into the on pace.
Let's see. I mean, you wouldn't know until whoever won the other wild card series, but do you want to see the Yankees in the divisional series or in the ALCS?
ALCS.
Okay.
ALCS. That's box office, man. ALCS. Yeah. And
that's our dojo.
Beaten up on the Yankees too regularly.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah, it's like that's the one that brings up the most.
That's our dojo, yes.
That brings up the most PTSD amongst Yankees fans. There'll be a feeling of imminent doom.
Yes.
If the Astros take on the Yankees in the ALCS.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay. Yep. That's what I want. That's what I want. Should be fun, man. But I'm feeling like it's. Let's get to October. Let's get there. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Final segment coming up. We'll talk to the guys on In the Loop. There was a ton of injury news with the Texans yesterday. Let's go through these. Which of these are going to be the toughest to deal with for week three purposes? Let's just eat what's on our plate and look at the Minnesota Vikings. Which of these is going to be the toughest to backfill, if indeed they need to backfill? That is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, injuries starting to rear their ugly head with the Texans a little bit this week. They had been a pretty healthy team through training camp and through week one, but kind of banged up now. And we've got Brevin Jordan going to IR, which is unfortunate. Brevin looking to break out here in year four. It's a contract year for him. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Brevin Jordan heading to IR with a knee injury.
Yeah, first and foremost, it's really heartbreaking losing Brevin. Brevin was on his way to a breakout year. I feel sorry for Brevin and the injury. Anytime guys go through these injuries, it's always tough. So first thing first, it's about Brevin and him just attacking rehab the right way and getting back as soon as he can. But Rick was really excited with where he was headed. We have some slack to pick up there. Cade, Dalton, everybody had to step up, right, and try to fill that role.
They signed Irv Smith Jr., the Texans did, who's a former second-round pick out of Alabama who played for the Vikings the first 4 years of his career, played last year in Cincinnati. Really talented coming out of Alabama, never really kind of got to where the Vikings envisioned him, I don't think. That's why they traded for T.J. Hockenson. Yeah. But the Texans did sign him to the practice squad. I could see that possibly being an elevation, maybe this weekend. Yeah, I mean, they got two tight ends on the 53 right now.
Yeah, and there's some familiarity there with the scheme. Obviously, haven't played for O'Connell. Familiarity with the Texans style.
Yes,
I'm not saying that they signed him so they can get the intel from 2 years ago on Kevin O'Connell. I think they've got enough intel for the most part. So. I think the other part of this, too, is, okay, like British Brooks, who's kind of been used as a jack of all trades and certainly is not tight end sized. He's 5'10", 5'11", but can line up in line, can line up as the fullback. I think this might be, okay, is it British Brooks that gets elevated? Because British Brooks can also help with your beleaguered running back core, where both Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce are both banged up. That'll be interesting. If British Brooks gets used as more than just a special teamer, that he might be a little bit of your quasi tight end in this game.
Could be. They're down two centers right now, also, at least in terms of practicing so far this week. Juice Scruggs missed the win over the Bears with a groin injury. Jared Patterson filled in for him, but now Jared Patterson is banged up as well. They both were a no-go at practice yesterday. So Kendrick Green next up. Kendrick Green, just to be clear. Kendrick, not Kenya. And here is D'Amico Ryans on where they're at with the center position right now.
Whoever, you know, is out and different guys that step in, it's always up. It's never on one guy. You know, from that perspective of we're waiting, we're hanging our hats on one guy being able to communicate and handle everything, that's unfair, right? Offense, defense, special teams, like when you play this game, it's about as many guys as possible, however many guys it takes to communicate and get on the same page, all 11 guys. So it's not on one guy, it's everybody around, everybody helping each other. That's how we'll communicate.
Yeah. That said, I'm still super nervous about
it. Yeah, and you should be, Sean. Center. You should be. Yeah. You should be peeing down your leg like you're Caleb Williams or something,
how
okay?
Can you tell? Yes, I am.
So sometimes after the show, where I'm like, hey, come here, Sean. Let me tell you about these adult diapers. Remember the right. Seth Payne licensed right. adult diapers?
Yeah.
You
got it in you, man. If you just stop peeing down your leg, you stop making those mistakes of peeing down your leg. You got it in you.
So very loud environment up there in Minnesota. I'm guessing the crowd will be pretty damn amped up as they've gotten off to a good start and had a very good performance against the 49ers last week. So the offensive line in general, they've had some bad plays that are completely and totally mental. And that's the thing that I'd like to see get cleaned up. I mean, the interior three offensive linemen have all taken turns getting beat pretty badly at times just with simple D-line games, not blitzes or anything. And some of the run game negative plays have been just the lack of coordination and timing between the center and the guard or the guard and tackles. So a lot of this sloppiness that I don't want to say plagued the Texans. They've won the last two games. Right. But if they want to be a genuinely elite offense, they've just got to play cleaner football. Everything that CJ and D'Amico have said about not shooting themselves in the foot, playing cleaner football, all of that, a lot of that just comes down to guys being on it mentally. And it's hard to do that when you're swapping in a new center every single week.
Yeah, they'll as a team, probably need to play better than they did against the Bears to win this game on Sunday. I think it's a better football team they're going against, and it's in Minnesota.
It's a better football team in total. I think the Bears defense is a genuinely good defense, and they do a lot of things that'll, you know, screw you up mentally. Mm-hmm. But Flores, the defensive coordinator for the Vikings, he's almost diabolical. Whereas Eberflus, who's, you know, defense for the Bears, can disguise really well and they can get after you. I would say it's a little bit more simple than what Flores does, where Flores really tries to confuse the quarterback. So this one is very much on the offensive line being sharp mentally, but also on CJ being really sharp mentally and not falling for some of the traps that Flores can set for quarterbacks.
There's injuries at the running back position. Joe Mixon, as we all know, banged up his ankle against the Bears on Sunday Night Football. Damian Pierce missed the Bears game with a hamstring injury. Again, like the two centers, they didn't practice yesterday either. This injury report today is going to be a big one for the Texans this weekend. So we may get to see some Cam Akers. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday. This was the very first question right out of the shoot. What's the update on Joe Mixon?
Yeah, we'll take it day by day with Joe and his injury and see where he ends up at the end of the week still, you know, holding out hope that he can make it.
All right, so that's Mixon. Will we see more of Cam Akers?
Yeah, we'll see. Cam has ran the ball well. As we've seen, he did a good job for us. So we'll see where Cam is as we go throughout the week as well.
I wonder if Cam is on a pitch count of some sort just because he's had two Achilles tendon tears. And I know he looks really good and he looks plenty fast. Ball security was an issue last week. But as far as the actual running back stuff before the ball comes out of his hands, anything that would involve the Achilles tendons, I think he looks pretty good.
Yes.
But I just wonder if it's, you know, how does he feel during the week? Would the Texans themselves just be a little bit nervous about a guy that's been injured as dramatically as he has in his career about throwing him out there for a heavy workload? Maybe it ends up being J.J. Taylor a little bit or British Brooks. I think it's running back by committee this week.
Yeah, J.J. Taylor, that's a good mention, Seth. He's on the practice squad.
If Damian Pierce and Joe Mixon aren't playing.
Right. Now, if Joe Mixon doesn't play, but Damian Pierce does, then that gets a little interesting to me. Is that a 50-50 Cam Akers, Dameon Pierce, or is this a little, maybe an opportunity, a little redemption for Pierce here, being the guy for a day?
I don't think they go into the game knowing for sure. Yeah. I think that is 100% a game flow thing and see what's working and what isn't. Yeah, I think they'll. I mean, they'll obviously have it scripted out for the first however many plays.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So that's the question: who's the first to five carries? If it's Cam Akers and Dameon Pierce, who gets the five carries first?
Pierce, because he's going to be in there first. Yeah, yeah. I still think this team views Dameon Pierce as a better option than Cam Akers.
Fine.
Well, do you disagree? Yeah. Do you?
I can't disagree. I personally disagree, but I can't disagree given that they put him second on the depth chart, and he got the carry. He was active for game one. I can't. Although I can't disagree with how they view him.
No, you and I are on the same page on this. Our preference is Akers. The correct answer is Pierce.
Yes.
I think that's what it is. So, it's going to be fun, man. There's a lot of, I was just thinking of Grenard and Cashman and Danielle Hunter, but I forgot. Yeah, Diggs played in Minnesota, and Case Keenum is a hero up in Minnesota. Cam Akers was a Viking this a year ago,
Did you mention Jonathan Grenard?
I did. Yeah, Grenard and Cashman.
Okay. Yep. Well, I was watching the NFL.com preview, and I got hyper annoyed, Sean.
Why?
Because, it's just some guy reading a script.
Oh, with the numbers and everything.
Whoever wrote the script, he said, Texans fans, it's pronounced Grenard, not Greenard. And I'm like, all right, thanks, bro. We got it. All right. Yeah, we're familiar with the players. Go die.
Is that the guy that talks like this and he makes stupid jokes the whole time as well?
I kind of like his jokes, his delivery is just lacking a little bit. Yeah, he brings up a lot of pop culture references, of which I get, and other ones I have to Google. I feel like he'll bring back stuff from the 80s, but he'll also do more modern rap lyrics and what have you.
You know why I like them? Because they're 6 minutes long. That's why I like them. They're nice and concise.
They don't. You know what they do though? They put those stats up. They have really good stats on there. That's usually
Big
where
time.
I get some for our pregame show. I get some of the stats off of there.
Yeah, you should.
But they put the stats up like right over the highlights to where sometimes you can't see the actual highlight that's going on.
Yeah. Why do they do that?
And I know how to pronounce Jonathan Grenard.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Appreciate it. We're getting some texts about the Astros and the playoffs and the Tigers. What about Hunter Brown and Verlander going back to Detroit? That's a cool angle as well.
Oh, yeah. Good call. Good call. Yeah, that would be really good.
Yep. Do you think Yankee fans will chant, "We want Houston" this year again?
No, they've gotten that beat out of them, I think.
Yeah, I think so,
They've
too.
Gotten actually pretty – they don't boo Altuve nearly as vocally as they used to.
Because it's
I think
fuel.
A lot of them know that a booing Altuve ignites something in Altuve. Yeah. Especially this year's Altuve. Maybe this year, though, they'll do it because, boy, Altuve could get ejected.
Yeah.
If they're really paying attention, because Yankees fans are such smart baseball fans. They've been so good for so long. All that. Then if they've been paying attention, that maybe they'll try to bait Altuve into getting ejected somehow.
Dude. I was on a San Diego station. It was actually our sister station in San Diego yesterday. They're the flagship of the Padres. I was on with their midday show. And I was trying to convey just like how out of character this is for like this stretch of Altuve that we've gotten over the last month, where all of a sudden he's probably been ejected more. I think he's been ejected three times this season. That's got to be more than like the last handful of years combined for Altuve.
I would imagine. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I like it. Yeah. I like grumpy old Altuve. Damn. I hope he gets great. I hope he's basically Ty Cobb by the end of his career. He's just coming in spikes high on
not taking not the whole out other Ty second, Cobb experience. But
second baseman's tibias.
Did you? The best was Greg Kessinger's quote. What someone asked him after the game the other day, the one where Altuve got rejected. Like, what did you think when you were seeing Altuve out there taking his shoe and sock off? He said, "I was running over to get my glove." He knew he was going to have to play. That was pretty funny. Reggie Atitula is here. John Lopez is plugging his headphones in. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Doing pretty well, man. How about you guys?
Good. I mean, I got to have a nice deep conversation with the two of you during the break a few minutes ago in the other studio in there for about 3 minutes. You guys are all over this CJ Stroud, Caleb Williams deal.
You know what's weird about it is like we mentioned it yesterday, kind of like our quick thoughts or whatever.
Yeah.
I wake up this morning, the entire world is talking about this.
It's really wild to me. Like, I don't know. And we've had, and I'm curious your guys' thoughts on this. Like, we had a listener earlier. He wasn't the only one, but he was the one we read on the text page. It was Irwin. And I'm paraphrasing now because the text is long gone. But he said something to the effect of, hey, this is where the worm has turned. People are now starting to find faults with C.J. Stroud. This is a good thing for the Texans.
I actually don't think that's horrible.
No, I don't either. Yeah. I don't disagree with the take. I thought it was a really good take.
Yeah. Are you, Lopez, are you going to have Nick Wright on to defend his teardown of C.J. Stroud?
I actually did text him this morning, but we definitely will mention my guy's name. There's
we
no
have
question.
The audio if you need it.
We got it.
Okay,
we,
good.
We got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely listening to you fine fellas this morning.
Yeah.
It's a part of my wake-up routine now. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that, dude.
That's
appreciate
good. Were you impressed with how magnanimous we were today? What good human beings we were, and that we weren't petty hardly at all.
Till like 7.
Sure. Wait, this is pain and
till like 7:30.
Right?
Oh, me. This is his effort to do this. Set that he woke up with a goal of being more magnanimous.
You know what? We're just gonna give positive reinforcement. Yes, I was. I'm very proud.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, no, it can't be fake. We're not Caleb Williams here.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't nestle me upside your bosom and tell me everything's gonna be all right if it's not. No, it lasted one segment. Then we got petty AF.
Yeah, we did what we do. We did what we do. So. Yeah, I don't know. Reggie, where are you on it, man? Like, the whole Caleb's demeanor during that whole thing.
I kind of get it. And maybe this is just being a younger guy. Maybe that's what it is. And I very much have defaulted back to some of those instances where, you know, talking to mom or whatever, and she's like telling you something, you're like, I know. No, you're right. Like, hey, you got to protect yourself. Oh, no. I know, but like, you can't just be like, yeah, I know.
The funniest thing that happens when something like this goes down is the pausing of the still shot of interaction.
Oh, with his bottom lip sticking
because
out.
Because at one point, Caleb Williams stuck his bottom lip out, but it was, if you watch the video, he's going, like you do, you know, sometimes you stick your lip out and you nod your head. Well, they obviously, if it's a still shot, you don't get the head nodding. Yeah. You just get the lower lip sticking out. To where that looks like he wants to murder CJ.
Yes.
I'm about to kill this guy.
There's nothing. No, yeah, looking like Joe Brady isn't the way to get yourself more popular.
Joe Kelly.
Yeah, Joe Kelly.
Joe Brady, too.
I was like, man, Seth is really in that film because I don't know what Joe. I couldn't pick Joe Brady out of a lineup, man.
Yeah. Joe Kelly. Yeah, that guy.
Joe Kelly. Yep.
Oh, man.
Dodger reliever. All right, gentlemen. Well, we look forward to today's
We look forward
program.
To it.
Yeah. Astros yesterday, man. I think we're just set with the 3 seed right now, it looks like.
It's kind of like whatever. They win, they lose, whatever.
Real quick. Would you rather they play Minnesota or Detroit as the 6 seed? Astros will be the 3. Detroit's a half game back of Minnesota right now.
Yeah, baseball perspective, I'd rather face Detroit.
Okay.
PR and storyline and narrative perspective, Minnesota?
Okay. Even with A.J. Hinch on the other side.
Yeah, because A.J. Hinch, I think you talked about this morning. It's going to be the whole A.J.
Oh, it's going to get dredged back up.
Manage,
you got a preference?
I think I might lean towards the Twins. The Tigers been on form.
No, that's true. Like, yeah, the Tigers are kind of...
The whole playing good baseball at the right time.
A little like the Astros
18
since
and 8
June.
Since August 22nd, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I don't know if I want that.
The same reasons that Astro fans might not want to face Detroit are the same reasons why Yankee and Baltimore fans and Cleveland are a little nervous about the Astros.
Yes,
absolutely.
Better than the record. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, and good luck to you and me both as we act like Johnny Appleseeds of positivity around the world today. Okay?
Safe travels. I will see you tomorrow, my friend.
Oh, I'm traveling. Oh, I got to go to the airport. Okay, great.
Oh, yeah, that's today.
Nothing like getting out of Oregon to ruin the 18 hours of your day.
The worst.
There's no place harder to get out of on Earth than Eugene. I'd rather be somewhere in the Middle East, damn it.
Okay. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2, an Odyssey station.